The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Jason Kimry. He's the Area Director, U.S. Federal for Intel Corporation. And you think of Intel, you think of CPUs, you think, well, I think of personal computers. But, boy, Intel's got a whole lot more than just personal computers. And what I want to do is bring Jason in the studio and maybe give the audience an idea of what Intel's up to, maybe some of the areas where they can impact all my listeners and figure out all different areas that Intel's involved in. And the reason I even brought Intel into the studio is I was at an Amazon Web Services conference a few weeks back. And I visited all the booths, and I looked at a booth and said, Intel on. I said, what in the world are they doing here? And I talked to the folks there, and I decided, let's get someone in the studio and talk about it. And then it dawned on me, it has a direct application for the cloud, direct application for Internet of Things, direct application for tablets. So it's the checklist here. Is all my listeners, this fills up the checklist, is what they're interested in. So that's why I want to have Jason come in and talk about what Intel's doing and how it can benefit you. But before we begin, Jason, tell us about your background, how you wound up working for Intel, please.
Thanks, John, and I appreciate the opportunity to come in today. I've actually been at Intel for 14 years. Prior to that, was in the healthcare industry and actually got a undergrad at James Madison University. So spent some time on the West Coast learning Silicon Valley way, and then had the opportunity to move back east and have been running our federal account management business development team for about 7 years. So it's been a great opportunity to educate federal agencies, partners, and other listeners around why Intel's relevant as you're making technology decisions.
You know, I've been doing radio for many, many years, and I can remember getting on the air talking about a 46 and a 36SX and a Pentium, and those were exciting times where that would be the front page of magazines, and people would stop you on the street and talk about the, you know, math coprocessor, and those are kind of the heydays, I think, for Intel, and it's kind of maybe taken second. But it hasn't really taken second stage. It's gotten maybe behind what's going on in the cloud. And you look at the last 10 years, go, well, geez, John, the cloud's just blown up and got real. Well, guess who's there? Intel's right at every step of the way. Intel must be at 95% of all servers in the cloud, aren't they?
Yeah, just about. And, you know, I think from a cloud standpoint, you know, Intel's still in our heyday. And I think, you know, what's driven that then and what's driving it now is still the existence of Moore's Law. The doubling of compute capability every 18 months is alive and well, and we still see a future for that, and we think it's critical because as you look towards the amount of data and the amount of compute requirements that are just continuing to expound year over year, the ability to put more and more transistors onto a CPU to be able to compute that amount of data is critical. So as you know, the move to the cloud is just, I would say, is another great chapter in Intel's history, and we do power over 95% of the world's clouds today, and continue to work more and more with the cloud partners to take advantage of the not only the performance capabilities that we're putting into our CPUs, but also the management and the security and the reliability features that people just come to know and expect from Intel.
Now, I've done so many shows on security in the cloud and mobile and cloud deployment and public cloud and transition, and it's like being stuck in traffic and not realizing that all these cars have, you know, internal combustion motors in them, and all this cloud talk I've done for the last 7 years is, oh, by the way, the motor is Intel. You might as well get the motor manufacturer in and talk about that. John, you're like the shadow person that's in every discussion.
Right.
It's true, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I think, you know, people, it's just an assumption that we're going to be in a lot of these platforms. But again, from an Intel standpoint, what we're trying to focus on is it's not, while performance is critical, it's, you know, making sure that we continue to put features and capabilities into our platforms that, whether it's a Dell or an HP or a cloud service provider like an HP or an Amazon or an IBM or others can really expose to their customers. So at the end of the day, users can really realize the most benefit from the capabilities that we're providing. And again, that's security, it's manageability, it's reliability, it's power, reduce power consumption, all things that users care about.
7 years ago, I had Aileen Black in the studio. She had just started with VMware and talked about this strange concept called virtualization. And little did we know that it just blew up. And now today, virtualization has matured. And we're at the level now where people are looking at many ways to manage virtualized environments. In fact, there's software-defined networks, there's virtualized routers, and all kinds of virtualization being applied all kinds of different ways. And that's the conversation I had at the trade show with the Intel person who was there. And I said, well, what's Intel got to do with the cloud? And then he talked for an hour. He said, well, you know, virtualization, John? I said, yeah. He goes, well, you can directly impact the way you can manage your virtualized machines. And I said, well, tell me more. So I'm going to have you tell us more. And so how can Intel help me manage my virtualized environment?
Well, I think, you know, 7 years ago when virtualization first came out and VMware started, it was essentially software tricking the hardware into believing that there was multiple servers there. And what that created was a lot of performance overhead. It wasn't that effective. People would say you could consolidate 20 servers down to one, but the reality was it wasn't very effective. So over these years, what Intel has done is can really work closely with the virtualization providers to make the hardware more accepting of virtualization, putting virtualization hooks into the hardware, putting security features in there that makes the virtual machines more, more secure. Different capabilities that you just unless you're in the implementation of these, you might not really appreciate. But you know what's happened is we've essentially made virtualization more accessible and more effective. And what that essentially has done is laid the foundation for cloud. And if you look at virtualization was really the first step towards an enterprise moving towards a cloud-based infrastructure. And now the next frontier is how successfully can you move workloads from private cloud to public cloud and hybrid clouds and back and forth. And because that's ultimately where, I think a lot of agencies are really looking to get.
And one of my most popular topics on the air has been mobile. And I think Intel's being a big player in this mobile world as well, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. If you just look at the PC market in the last year, it's really probably, it's the most innovation I've seen in the last year that we saw probably in the 10 years prior. And a lot of that is driven by the advancement of smartphones and tablets, and people's requirements have changed with respect to mobile computing. So from our standpoint, what we're seeing is just a really exciting amount of innovation in the mobile platforms and people looking towards their PC platforms as a way to extend their enterprise into the field. And for us, that's really exciting.
So what your role is, Jason, is let's say that I am a federal CIO, and I'm just getting pushed and pulled in a million different directions. I've got no budget. I've got a lot of tasks. I've got projects. I got to figure out how to work them. I would bring you in or someone on your team, and we'd get a piece of paper out, and we'd try to figure out what's the most efficient way to deploy something to the public cloud, or what's the most efficient way to structure an architecture that would include Intel hardware? Is that what your role is?
Yeah, Intel's in a unique spot and different from all of the other vendors that you see in the market, because at the end of the day, for the most part, we are not selling a direct product to the agencies. Federal agencies can't write a PO to Intel to purchase our systems directly from us. But we are the building block supplier to the computing ecosystem, and we have a lot of capabilities in-house to help customers develop that roadmap, whether it's their mobile strategy, their cloud strategy, their data center strategy, their big data strategy, even Internet of Things. We have a significant organization behind us that's investing in how our technology is being used. I have solution architects, on my team that are focused in some of these emerging areas. And our goal is really to help glue some of these pieces together and help customers determine how best to adopt these technology in a reasonable, cost-effective way and get the most out of their investment.
I think that's the key. If one of the benefits of the cloud is to share resources and maybe scale on demand, I mean, what is the best way for me to take advantage of that capability? And maybe it would be in knowing that there's new technology from Intel that allows my virtualized server to scale in a more efficient manner than it could before, and that would accomplish the task of having that flexibility. So it's one thing to talk about the flexibility. It's another thing to actually put in work boots and have it actually be installed in a data center.
Yeah, and I think that's certainly where those are the conversations we like to get into, and it's really the architecture level discussion. And, you know, I think from an Intel standpoint, I think one of the value adds that we bring is that we can not only talk about the technology that's available today, but also the technology that's coming tomorrow. You know, we have engineers that are working on products that you won't see for five more years. But when you're planning a budget strategy or an IT strategy, you're thinking 3 to 5 years out, and it's important to take that into account.
I'm just thinking 30 seconds out because we have to take a break and come back. We'll talk about cloud infrastructure, and maybe talk about security and some of the developments from Intel. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Jason Kimry, Area Director, U.S. Federal Intel Corporation. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Jason Kimry, Area Director, U.S. Federal Intel Corporation. For more information, you can go to Intel. This is a radio-friendly word, intel.com/federal. I was there this morning, and I read some white papers. There's a video there. There's 2-minute video. There's 30-minute video. There's all kinds of information. So if you're scratching your head going, Intel, well, like the shadow company that's behind everything. It's like they're behind all these servers and these mobile devices and IoT, and you can go there and learn all kinds of information. This morning I spent about an hour listening to this guy talking about some challenges in managing virtual devices in the cloud, and some of these things had never dawned on me, and maybe we'll talk about them later on in the show. But if you really want to get a deep dive in this, believe me, Intel will give you as deep as you want and as long as you want and all kinds of information. The information we want out of you today, Jason, is just in general. I mean, let's broaden my mind or open my mind to this. I mean, you're involved in the Internet of Things. Your company's involved in mobile, I mean, in servers. Tell me about this IoT and the mobile interest your company has.
Yeah, you know, IoT and the Internet of Things it's really the next great frontier. And I think from a technology company standpoint, and we're not alone, everyone sees this as the opportunity. And, you know, you hear all kinds of ranges in, you know, the proliferation of devices. And really what even starts with the definition of a device, it's no longer just a PC or a phone or a server. It's everything from anything that has a IP connection. And, you know, that could be everything from a bracelet to a watch to a sensor. And, you know, we're even saying that, you know, we could even see, you know, the number of internet connected devices actually touch 50 billion by 2020. So just a staggering number of devices, you know. So and, you know, the idea is, you know, if it's IP connected, it's generating data. And then it's a matter of, you know, what do you do with that data and what kind of decisions can you make and what kinds of possibilities does that create? And it's really just stunning when you think about it. You know, even thinking through organizations like NOAA generate 10 petabytes of data a day. Just imagine the impact of decisions that could be made if people can get their hands on it and make decisions from it. And that's really what the Internet of Things is about. And it's, you know, where we see an opportunity. We see the opportunity, you know, in a bunch of different areas, from the sensors, the things that are actually collecting that information, to the gateways, the thing that actually collects some of that information and does some of that analytics, to the data center. You know, how do you really, when you're talking 10 petabytes of data a day or just these stunning matter of amounts of data, you know, you've got to put that into a data center where you can really start to making decisions on the fly. So we see implications everything from healthcare to industrial to automotive. The opportunities are really limitless.
I have a friend named Bill who wears one of these smart watches. It's a big, ugly thing, and he redeems himself because he does all his work in his car. It can take apart a diesel motor. But he wears this big, ugly, and I think, well, that's a device. That is an IP. That's an address there, probably collecting data on him and everything
else. Absolutely.
And so I'm stretching my mind, and so from my audience, a typical govvy has got something around his neck every day called a CAC, a CAC card, and that, guess what? That's an IP device too, isn't it? Are you guys even involved in that area?
So CAC, you know, what the CAC card is more of a, you know, it's the authentication I guess it's the tool that many federal agencies use to authenticate their devices on the network. It's the first line of security to make sure that you are who you say you are when you're accessing sensitive or agency data. But what's happening is there's just a proliferation of new technologies that we could even see replacing CAT cards. I mean, with the move towards derived credentials and two-factor authentication, even seeing recent notes from Terry Halverson at DOD to and recent movements at NIST to allow derived credentials really enables both a higher level of security, but also new paradigms for the way that people can ensure that that their data is safe and secure.
I was at an event in Arlington up on the rooftop about 3 weeks ago, and I was standing there with this guy named Eugene Kaspersky, and we were looking out over Washington, D.C., pointing at the Pentagon and everything else, and we talked about passwords, and he said, well, I think we got to get out of the password business. I mean, password's something that's evolved over the years, and I have so many passwords, I don't even know them anymore. I have a spreadsheet with all kinds of different passwords, and I'm not unusual in this. And maybe that's the whole idea of derived credentials can maybe say, okay, guess what? Maybe it's not just a password. Maybe it's something that's more difficult. And maybe that's where Intel will fit in with this derived credential thing.
Huh? Yeah, it just opens up the possibilities. We acquired McAfee several years ago. That's now under the Intel security brand, but we've really been promoting this concept of you are your password. And as we integrate 3D cameras and other sort of technology directly into devices, the need for a password absolutely goes away. And there are certainly more effective ways to authenticate somebody, and nothing better than your own face. And with 3D cameras, you can really, it becomes very hard to trick a system into believing that it's anyone but you. And we clearly know that passwords are can be and have been broken, and is really just in long term is going to be an ineffective way to ensure security.
When you think of the cloud, you said it earlier, it was a public cloud, a private cloud, and then some kind of a hybrid cloud. Well, Intel could be in all three of those clouds. It would probably be to Intel's advantage to be able to understand how to manage that transition. I guess that's what some of the tools we have are all about, is helping people manage the transition. Or even if you're an agency and you keep everything in-house, this could be a cloud environment that has to be managed.
Yeah, and I think that's where we want to help in the planning process. Again, it's stage one is getting to a virtualized environment, which we have tools and capabilities to help customers with. But then, as you look towards the, what applications make sense to move to a private cloud? What applications make sense to stay in a private cloud? And where does hybrid fit into that? And again, I think where we've tried to invest is with all of the leading cloud service providers, and also the tools that are being created to help customers. OpenStax is a great example of bringing the open source capability to the cloud world, and in doing so, reducing some of that vendor lock-in or that proprietary lock-in that so many agencies and customers have dealt with in the past, and trying to prevent that from happening in a cloud. Because the last thing that anyone wants to do is make a decision from an infrastructure standpoint and then be locked into it.
Yeah, just to put this in a little bit of perspective here. There's a company called Citrix that got behind a product called CloudStack. And 2 or 3 years ago, everyone's money was on CloudStack because we thought it was going to just blow up. What's happened is this little project that originated partially at NASA, by the way, called OpenStack, has kind of been, was behind in the race. Now they're kind of catching up and moving ahead. And all of a sudden, a lot of people are going, well, there's a lot of value in OpenStack. It's been tried and tested, and it works with a wide variety of vendors. You don't get vendor lock-in. And, oh, by the way, it also works with Intel and helps Intel manage virtualized environments. It looks like OpenStack is leading in this race right now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the open source movement is it's won out in a lot of areas. Whether it's in big data with the emergence of Cloudera, in the mobile platforms, certainly with Android. Clearly there's other platforms out there that are very robust and very capable, but there is a need for open and interoperable systems, and if OpenStack helps you get there, that's a good thing. But I think what's great is that you're seeing all of the traditional IT players really embrace open open architectures and really trying to avoid these situations where you're getting locked in and really trying to provide everyone the tools that they need to have flexibility and choice, because that's what ultimately what customers want.
Well, it's almost like a virtualized server being able to dynamically change. I think the environment has to be able to dynamically change as well. And what Intel does is just brings the tools to allow that. For example, scaling up and scaling down. Most of my listeners, I think, are interested in the cloud. They think about security, data protection, and performance. What I'd like to do is maybe take a break and come back and talk about those three concepts and see where Intel can help my listeners with security, how they can help with data protection, and then maybe with performance, and see where they fits in their big picture of their IT plans for the next few years. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Jason Kimry, Area Director, U.S. Federal, Intel Corporation. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Jason Kimry, Area Director, U.S. Federal Intel Corporation. We're talking about, apparently, behind everything, behind the cloud is this big company called Intel, and I never dawned on me until I was at a trade show a few weeks back. Decided to bring Intel into the studio and learn about the company, see how it has impacts our listeners. If you want more information, Intel, very easy, intel.com/federal, white papers and videos and all kinds of stuff to learn about the company. It is, kind of active on Twitter. The handle is @IntelFederal. And a lot of my listeners, you know, Jason, read blogs. I have students that read blogs, and I have a blog called Tech Tuesday Blog. Are there blogs that you read? Is there something maybe my listeners can read or try to catch up with what's going on in the world of Intel?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, if I was... Yeah, I look at it in two different ways. From, you know, I focus a lot on the technology, obviously, and, you know, from a technology standpoint, you know, to try and keep up with what's going on, everything from CIO Magazine to Mashable to PC Mag to, you know, there's a lot of different.
It crosses over everything. It crosses over cloud, security.
It's yeah, so it crosses over everything. But, you know, and then from a federal market standpoint, you know, all the major magazines, whether it's the GCN, the Atlantic Media Companies, FedScoop, really try to stay on top of what's going on. But even more importantly, or equally importantly, I try to stay on top of kind of what are the business drivers that are affecting companies, both commercial and government. So, you know, everything from Harvard Business Review to Government Executive Magazine, and really understanding the
heating
mission
and cooling
side.
Issues. So yeah. Who saw that, you know?
So there's just so many different... you know, ways to get information. And that's what, you know, where I get a lot of things. I use Pulse regularly. I think it's a great app on that you can get from the Windows Store or Android or iOS. But just a great way to get a lot of different content in a short digestible piece.
You have to be so broad. I had the guy in the air here who ran all the servers for the US Congress. And he said, spent 20 years in this business, learned everything about TCP/IP and security, and spends half his time up on the roof with a thermometer and this laser thing to test temperatures. He says, I got to be an AC guy now, an HVAC more than anything, but it's part of the whole picture. And I think even Intel has to even look that way and consider power considerations and everything else, because it's part of the whole picture of this dynamic nature of servers and huge server farms and data centers and just the design of a data center is a whole world in and of itself, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that the heating and cooling example, I mean, it's one of those areas that, you know, I would never have thought about. But if you look at going back to Internet of Things and where some of the most immediate opportunities are, it's really in preventative maintenance and putting sensors and analytics platforms right at the edge of things like heating and cooling systems, or in our own manufacturing plants. We're using sensors and really trying to get to early detection of when systems are going to break. And the sooner you can detect whether or not it's, you know, rotating too fast or heating up too fast or not heating up enough, there's so many different indicators that can indicate that something is going to go wrong in a industrial system. And if we can make those decisions faster with information more available, you know, that will reduce cost.
And I think that boils down the Internet of Things. I mean,
exactly.
Where does Intel fit with the Internet of Things? Well, if you have a factory and you have a sensor on a certain device, and if it gets too hot or too cold, it needs to be replaced. Well, that's a whole lot better than my son's car being towed to the shop yesterday. and he may have lost a day of work or something. But in a factory that's producing $1 million of equipment every day, you can't afford to be down even 20 minutes. And so that's where the Internet of Things fits in, I think.
Yeah, I know there's a recent case study even inside of Intel where we put some of these sensor technologies into our own manufacturing floor on some of the technologies that we use. And we're able to show $9 million in savings in some of the early detection and the preventative maintenance aspects of that. So, yeah, there's case studies all around. At Intel, we've tried to... In most technologies and emerging areas, we try to lead in adopting these technologies, testing them out on ourselves to see what works. And in fact, a lot of those case studies are some of the most valuable things we provide to federal agencies and to enterprises at large. Is how is Intel handling things like everything from cloud to IoT to big data, and what are some of the cost savings or benefits that we're seeing within ourselves? And we always make those people available to our customers.
During the break, we were talking about the number of employees that Intel has, and I was really surprised at how many and the size of the company. Why don't you just tell our listeners? I was shocked.
Yeah, so Intel is obviously a very global company, over 1,000, right around 100,000 employees, 50,000 of those are in manufacturing, and well over 10,000 software engineers. So people don't realize if Intel was a software company, which, in some ways we are, but we're obviously, our core business is in manufacturing microprocessors, we would be one of the largest software companies in the world because we do a lot of software development and hardware and software really must work seamlessly together. And we invest significantly in the software ecosystem to make sure that happens.
And I'm interested in seamless, and my listeners are interested in seamless. And they're also interested in security, data protection, performance. And I teased that before the break. And I think Intel is a player in this area, can have an impact on my listeners achieving security, the cloud technology or servers. Maybe you can touch on some of the characteristics. I've read about this Turbo Boost. I've read about TXT. Maybe my listeners aren't aware of some of these capabilities that Intel provides now.
You know, security it's always been important, and it's, every day you read about something else that indicates why it's more important. And I think what's happening is you're seeing the importance of security in all the different platforms. And I think, so Intel has done a great job, I think, of putting security features directly into client platforms, server platforms, things like AES encryption, which, we basically put... we put AES instruction set into our, we continuously are adding AES instructions into our platform, so security software and can run more effectively on our CPUs. Things like trusted execution technology, which enable a higher level of trust and security at the at boot in the platforms. Lots of different security features. I think where we see a lot of opportunity is, how do we extend those security capabilities, further out to the edge? I think one of the big concerns is there's not a lot of security at some of these emerging sensor platforms and IP connected devices. So whether that's a phone or a sensor at a heating and air conditioning system, those are all, if it's IP connected, those are entry points for something bad to happen. And, we are continuously trying to put security features that many users have come to expect in data center platforms and PC platforms, and really pushing those out to the edge.
So is that what this hardware-based root of trust is all about? That's a phrase I've seen with describing some of your products.
Yeah, I think, where we've seen a lot of interest in hardware root of trust is in these cloud environments, and how can you ensure that... the whole concept of geofencing or geotagging or geolocation is something that NIST has been really working on for quite a while. And it's, how can you ensure that the workloads that you're running are in a data center that you can trust, in an environment that you can trust, and know that, you have some visibility into the security capabilities. So what we've done is, work collectively with the software ecosystem, with the cloud service providers, and then our own hardware engineers to ensure that, you know, the highest level of security is available, regardless of where that data center, where that server sits, and give you the ability to ensure that your workload is safe and protected.
And it's not just one way. You have to have a car that gets 3 miles to gallon, as my son will tell you, and it's got to be safe. You got to have six airbags. So going 60 miles an hour ain't good enough anymore. You got to get good mileage, and you got to be safe, and you got to be kind of snazzy looking as well. And so you have characteristics to your servers like a turbo boost, huh? Which actually dynamically allows a server to ramp up and ramp down, just like a virtualized server does.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, what we see is, you know, there are plenty of examples of workloads where, you know, for several hours a day, it needs to be run at full capacity. But there are certainly times, certainly at night or certainly at other, you know, times in the day when, you know, where a server may be, you know, 10, 15% utilized. And there's no reason to be paying the power bill or, you know, the performance hit that you can get if the systems aren't being used. So what we've tried to do is put technology like Turbo Boost and others to dynamically power, provide the capability to ensure that you've got the most performance you need, but when you're not using it, power it down.
Yeah, that's the other half of the coin we talked about earlier. Let's take a break and come back, talk more about Intel and the cloud and the federal government moving to the cloud and some of the challenges in that general area. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Jason Kimry, Area Director, U.S. Federal Intel Corporation. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Jason Kimry, Area Director, U.S. Federal Intel Corporation, talking about the hardware behind the cloud. And I was as surprised as most of my listeners to realize that, geez, you know, we've been talking about public cloud, private cloud, hybrid cloud, but the company behind it is Intel sitting on many of those servers, and they've kept up with technology. They made a lot of improvements with performance, security, and data protection. And that's the topics we've hit on most of this interview. And a lot of concepts I never even realized that many people work for Intel, didn't realize how big a company it was. It's kind of fascinating. A lot of people follow Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Ray Gilray. If you want more information on Intel, you can follow at Intel Federal. Find out about trade shows, maybe new technology, maybe read some of the reports about sensor chips that they're developing for wearables and for robots. I mean, where do we start with Intel? So much stuff going on, huh, Jason?
Yeah, it's...
Robots?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, our mantra is if it computes or connects to the internet, it's going to do it best on Intel. And that, you know, so I think... we see, you know, tremendous runway in our traditional platforms, the PC and the server, but just so much opportunity as both the amount of data expands, the need for more infrastructure expands, but then everything from the, you know, wearables and sensor devices and the ability to put analytics on those platforms is just an awesome opportunity.
Many of my listeners have been listening to this interview and they're scratching their heads going, this guy's an Intel guy. I wonder what kind of computers he have at home. What kind of cell phone does he use? What kind of smartphone does he use? So I put together a 10-question test that my listeners all love to hear. It says, I didn't really have an XYZ. So I'm going to give these questions and find out, Jason, if you're in fact a card-carrying nerd. The first question is, let's talk about old-school desktops. We started with 46 and Pentiums. How many old-school desktops do you have floating around your house?
You know, it's interesting with the desktops. I think we're fully, we don't have any left, but, you know, actually the last device I actually bought was for my home, and it was an all-in-one. So it's actually back to the future, bringing that desktop capability back in-house. But, you know, the desktops of today don't look like the ones, you know, an all-in-one, essentially the CPU, the entire platform sits inside the
inside
the screen. Absolutely. With you know, Windows 8.1 touch and 27-inch, I think it's an HP machine, but it's just an awesome device. And it's, you know, for the kids, you know, touch has just become a requirement. So it's been, you know, I think that's been the one thing that we've had to do is...
My daughter got Windows 8.1. I said, none of the nerds like that. They don't like it. And she goes, that's because they're idiots. They got to buy a computer with a touch screen. It works fine.
Yeah.
And guess what? Works fine.
Yeah.
If you have the touch screen, but you can't force it on something.
Well, and that's been
made for.
And that's one of the things that you don't quite realize, but, you know, with Intel now, if it's to be an Ultrabook, which has pretty much become the standard of notebooks, it has to have a touch screen, and you're just seeing tremendous number of touch-based devices that are now in the market. You're seeing Microsoft just make huge advancements. You know, 8.1, but Windows 10 was announced yesterday with tremendous new features. They're bringing the, you know, the start menu and some of those other capabilities back. But you know, we're really in such an infancy in terms of, you know, what touch screen and touch capability can bring to devices, that, you know, there's just so much advancement that it's pretty exciting to think about.
Next question: how many cell phones have you purchased for yourself in the last year?
You know, and for myself, just one. I'm a pretty stable user, but
no problem. And do you have a personal Twitter account, Twitter feed?
We use Intel Federal. You know, from my standpoint, that's what we're focused on. But
do you have a personal blog?
No, what we've been doing recently, and what I've done is, you know, we've been publishing different articles. You know, whether it's we just had one last week in GCN around the future of mobility that I authored.
Mobile and Intel. Who would know? Mobile and Intel. Connect the dots. I wouldn't connect the dots, because my next question is, what kind of smartphone do you have?
Right now, I use an iPhone, but I'm actually, I would say, looking at alternative platforms. I think the Windows Phone really looks pretty compelling right now, and I'm looking at making the shift.
I see that trending, by the way, among sophisticated software developers. I see that Windows Phone trending. I don't know why. And what's the most popular app on your phone you use in the last 30 days?
Well, I think I mentioned earlier, Pulse is just a great app to get lots of kind of industry data in a really quick
That's
fashion.
A good tip for my listeners.
So Pulse. I use Pulse.
That's good. And are you active in any social networking sites? Facebook, LinkedIn, anything like that?
I think LinkedIn and Twitter are probably, okay, you know, where I get most of the information.
And we break into your house. How many tablets do we see floating around your house here?
I think, you know, there's a couple of iPads. You know, I would say it's interesting. You know, when the iPad first came out, you know, it was kind of like that was going to solve everything. And in my house, that was what everyone used. But, you know, it's become, you know, more of my kids' device now to watch shows. And we're seeing much more of, you know, I've got a couple of MacBook Airs. We've got the all-in-one PC that I mentioned, another Ultrabook that my wife uses. So it's really, you know, we're just seeing a lot of different devices. But it seems to be going a lot of, you know, it's a lot of focus on the smartphone, and a lot of the PC-like devices is kind of where it seems to be.
And the last book you read, Jason, was electronic or paper?
Electronic, reading it on my Kindle, reading about the migration or the early Americans going to Paris, written in the 1830s time frame that David McCullough wrote.
Oliver Wendell Holmes.
Yep.
Yeah, I read that this year as well. Yeah. It was a fascinating book, isn't it?
Yeah, Holmes, Samuel Morse, you know, just a lot of...
David McCullough's last book.
Yeah, it was just a really great...
You never got the connection between medicine and France and the United States.
Yeah.
That story tells the story so well. It's just, very few people know about David
McCullough. Yeah, his ability to write using letters is pretty stunning. And it's just, you know, it's the historical fiction or the historical accuracy that we get from the letters that were written between people at that time is really amazing.
An unlikely read for a nerd. But maybe we'll have to take this test. And he scales more towards maybe the scholar than the nerd. Kind of interesting. But I read all of McCullough, and I think he's just a fascinating writer. Switching from David McCullough and history to the future. What about the cloud and the federal government and Intel? And I just can't believe Intel's now involved in Internet of Things and robots and sensor chips and so many different ideas. Where's Intel going to be heading, and where's the federal government going to be heading? Is it all going to be cloud-based or public or private? What do you see happening?
You know, I think it's going to be a combination. You know, from an data center standpoint, I think it's going to be a combination. I think what's exciting to me is you know, what are the advancements that we're going to get from this technology? You know, I think one of the exciting announcements that Intel made back at our developer forum in September was a recent partnership that we announced with the Michael J. Fox Association. Our former CEO, Andy Grove, has been very public in his battle with Parkinson's. And we see so through our work with him and the Michael J. Fox Foundation, we're already combining data analytics platforms from Cloudera, who we made a significant investment in, analytics algorithms that we developed, and then wearable devices that Parkinson patients are wearing, that we can actually track over 320 movements per second on a Parkinson's patient, that can in turn give researchers and physicians just a tremendous amount of data to help with diagnostics, treatment, preventative preventative care, just a really stunning amount of things that I just think we're just at the cusp of seeing what the benefits of technology can really do for treating the world's most important problems.
No, I look at my analytics for the show. One of my most popular topics is healthcare IT. And when I invited you into the studio, I never thought that we'd circle around and talk about healthcare IT and Intel. Yeah. But there's another area where it fits in, also with the concept of big data. And Mike Olson from Cloudera was in here. I didn't realize that Intel's also an investor in Cloudera. Is that right? So you're right in that game as well.
Yeah, it's, you know, the big data, it's just that there's just so many possibilities from the big data and from the data center side, all the way down to the size of the transistors. The transistors that we manufacture today are, you know, a quarter of the size of the influenza virus. You know, so it's, you know, the ability to start talking about things like molecular diagnostics is it's a real possibility now, because the ability to compute, put compute capability at such a small size is now here. And I think just the opportunities are boundless.
Yeah, it's a fascinating. I think in a year we'll see some all kinds of new news coming out of Intel. And I'd like to find out more about the sensors and getting that big data and making sense of it, maybe with data visualization tools and analytical tools. I think that's going to be the next step in the world of the cloud and big data. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio, Jason Kimry, Area Director, U.S. Federal, Intel Corporation.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Electromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.